everybody. JJ Cooper, Jeff Ponce, another of the Baseball America Prospect Podcast Deep Dives. And today we are talking about the St. Louis Cardinals, an organization that has embarked on, if we won't call it a rebuild, at least a step back and a youth movement that we've seen. And it's led by now one of the best prospects in baseball. Jeff, great to see you. And I'm just going to dive right in here because we have a number one prospect in every organization. So we ask this question: how difficult was the decision to rank? In the case of J.J. Weatherholt at number one, it's obviously easy because when you talk about J.J. Weatherholt, you are literally talking about someone that we were in consideration. He's one of the top three prospects in the game, number three prospect on our top 100. I'm imagining that that was the slam dunk, even in an organization that has some other top 100 prospects. He was the slam dunk choice.
Yeah, he really was. And I think, you know, the debate with him is he's not one or two, but it's, you know, is he three through 10, right? Depending upon what top 100 list you're looking at. But he's in the conversation for sort of that next tier of excellent prospects. Maybe he's not one of the two elite guys, but sort of falls in right below that, is going to be a valuable defender besides all the things that he brings offensively. I think that's something with Weatherholt that gets a little bit underrated is he can play all over the infield, you know, strong at shortstop, above average there probably every day if he wasn't an organization where someone like Mason Wynn wasn't their everyday shortstop. I think naturally would slide over to third base or, you know, even second base, depending upon how that infield sort of comes to be on opening day. I do expect him to break camp. I think that, you know, he got more than a half season in AAA last year with Memphis, really produced there, even made some slight adjustments to his swing and his approach just to get to a little bit more impact, a little bit more home run power that I think is still kind of bubbling under the surface there. And as, you know, he sort of grows and progresses and some of that final projections kind of hits his body, I think he is a guy that does project for 20 plus home run powers. It just may not be immediately, and especially in a place like St. Louis, which isn't the easiest to hit for power. I think, you know, day one might be the best hitter in the organization right now. Really good bats of ball skills, excellent approach, one of the better approaches in the game. It's a 70 hit tool. We've said this on other podcasts. Had it not been for Kevin McGonigal, this would be the best hit tool in the minors.
Along those lines, I we're going to not spend as much time on our number one prospect here because, as you noted, we just, if you want more, we'll link to it. But the top 100, I'll put it like the link right there. The top 100, we talked in depth about J.J. Weatherholt on that because he's the number three prospect in our top 100 video. But what I would note with this, though, also, you mentioned that you expect him to break camp. He's a player who I think that you and I actually had an offline Slack discussion yesterday about, does PPI incentives and all influence decisions? I probably think it affects him a little bit more than you do, but I would say the way I would put it is even if it's just a minor factor, in the case of Weatherholt, he should go into the season as one of the leading candidates to be Rookie of the Year in 2026. And if that's the case, if he's on the opening day roster or very close, therefore, to the opening day roster, you get an extra draft pick. But the flip side of that also is if you don't put him on the opening day roster, if you wait a little while and then he is Rookie of the Year, well, he's going to get the full year of service anyway. So there's an incentive on both sides. Not that we're going to say like, oh, he's guaranteed to be rookie or anything like that, but he has opportunity. Like you said, this is a guy who, when you can hit like this, it gives you a better chance to be a Rookie of the Year candidate. But the other thing that stands out here is there are multiple other players here on this top 10, top five, really, that if there's no J.J. Weatherholt, Liam Doyle is a perfectly, not just acceptable, but you would feel very good, I think, in an organization about having Liam Doyle as your number one prospect. And I would throw Rynel Rodriguez, their number three prospect, into that boat as well. This is a number three prospect on the Cardinals list who in many years, I think, over the last decade or so would have maybe been the number one prospect in the Cardinals organization. What do you see with Doyle?
Yeah. And I think when you, I'll just, you know, kind of speak on the top of the list here a little bit, and then we'll get into Doyle. You know, I think when you look at a good farm system, when you sort of have those questions, maybe not with a number one like Weatherholt where it's slam dunk, but when you have two or three top 100 prospects that are all within the top 50. And depending upon who you speak with, they might have Doyle higher, they might have Rodriguez higher. And that's even something that's reflected, you know, internally, I think, in our top 50s that got released. I think that's a good problem to have. And it sort of speaks to the depth of your system and the fact that you have a variety of different types of prospects. That said, I think the thing that I love about Doyle, it's obviously the fastball quality. That's kind of the foundation in this profile. One of the it's the hardest left-handed fastball in our top 100. It's one of the hardest left-handed fastballs thrown by a starter in the minors. If you just kind of look at, if the velocity holds the same as what we saw in college, and I think it will, that's not a problem. That's not a question with Liam Doyle's profile. He's super competitive. He's really fiery. I don't know if I would necessarily say like a bulldog. I don't love that expression. He's kind of a showman. And there's a lot of flair and a lot of swagger. And I think, you know, you sort of need that as a starting pitcher, because you're going to take your lumps and you're going to have your, you know, your big moments too. You know, a guy that has kind of leveled up each year that he was in college, has expanded his arsenal, though the big question mark with him is the secondaries. Does he have a plus secondary? I think the splitter in small samples has been above average, but we need to, you know, we're kind of extrapolating that over a larger sample size that may not necessarily hold the same sort of metrics and performance, but I think it's a good starting point. He does have multiple breaking ball shapes. So, you know, for him in the offseason, I think sort of finding a go-to breaking ball and an approach with his secondaries, because he's going to have to curb some of that fastball usage. But we've seen guys like this translate. I don't think the profile is all that different in some regards than what the questions were with Peyton Tolley, and some of the questions that still remain with Peyton Tolley. Hard throwing left-hander, really unique fastball traits, throws the fastball a lot. Well, we saw Tolley have a ton of success throwing fastballs at a much higher rate than anybody else in the Red Sox organization. Unique traits, just like Doyle. Velocity, not quite as much as Doyle, but some. And then sort of a mixed bag of secondary looks that he was throwing at you, and kind of, you know, just changing approaches and changing looks and trying to, you know, throw a bunch of pitches that move to different directions of the zone. There's a roadmap for this to work. I think the real big question mark with Doyle isn't going to be double A or even triple A. I think it's going to be what Doyle does when he first gets up to the major leagues, and, you know, how successful he can be as, you know, a primary fastball, probably off-speed pitcher, and not a breaking ball guy. As a lefty, that's probably a little easier than doing it as a righty, but we still obviously need to see the quality breaking ball. And even an average breaking ball that he can consistently land, which might be the cutter, I think that would take him to another level. But those are the questions that remain. I'm personally more in on Liam Doyle camp, just because of the fastball quality. And, you know, he does have a track record of being a starter, at least for 2 years in the SEC, but, you know, 3 years against pretty good college competition and really performing last year in the SEC.
And then Rynel Rodriguez, number three on this list. We'll get back to him, because I think he might be an answer to a question that we've got coming up. So before we get there, I do want to ask you, how is this system better or worse than last year?
Wow, it's leaps and bounds better than last year. I think, you know, you look, obviously Weatherholt was there at the top. You had more guys like Tink Hentz and a lot of those guys that maybe are coming off better seasons. But there wasn't the same amount of depth. There wasn't the same amount of quality. You did have a Rynel Rodriguez, but he was coming off a DSL season where there were still more questions than there are right now regarding how is he going to translate in terms of the hit tool. How is the power going to translate? There was a lot of stock in Yarío Padilla, who is still a pretty good prospect, but just kind of underperformed the expectations a little from what, you know, we had kind of heard with some of the growth in terms of height and you know, muscle mass and all that sort of stuff. So I think you look at some of the arms and you can maybe be a little bit more negative with some of the injuries that have happened. Hentz is coming off a bad year. Quinn Matthews is coming off a really down year after winning minor league pitcher of the year in 2024. But overall,
he's trying to follow the Robbie. Sorry, but he's trying to follow the Robbie Snelling path, because Robbie Snelling was our pitcher of the year the year before that. Yeah.
it, it always goes kind of bad and then goes good again. So, you know, maybe that's, you know, but I think there were always going to be some adjustments. I think we're a little shocked that he didn't get up to the big leagues. But with some of the struggles in arm, you know, injury, stuff like that, it's not all that shocking in retrospect. So I think you could look negatively at some of the arms. Cooper Jerpy obviously had a surgery. Tekoa Roby, who was a guy that scouts still are really high on, is out for all of 2026 after a pretty good 2025. I mean, you know, he got up to AAA, you know, he was on the 40-man roster. I don't think it would have been shocking to see him get some starts maybe down the stretch. So all that depth is still there. It's maybe, you know, ETA wise has changed a little bit. And they've backfilled with a ton of good trades at the trade deadline that added a lot of depth within this organization. They drafted well this year, and they had some breakouts with guys like Josh Baez and others that I think has really taken this system to another stratosphere. So it's much better, but I did try to focus on some of the maybe negatives that you could take away from it. I still think when you look at a lot of players coming in, not a lot of players coming out, not a lot of guys graduating, and they still have that sort of North Star at the top in J.J. Weatherholt.
Yeah, J.J. Weatherholt ranked 25th a year ago, Quinn Matthews 41st, Tink Hentz 68th on the top 100. This year, the Cardinals had three players in the top 33, including Weatherholt at three, which, by the way, that number three ranking is the highest ranked Cardinals prospect since the late Oscar Tavares. Kind of the tragic story, Oscar Tavares, who ranked number three basically a decade ago. Only players to ever rank higher on the Baseball America Top 100 for the Cardinals. Rick Ankiel, back when he was a pitcher, before he kind of had the thing. Man, he was really good as a pitcher before that. And J.D. Drew. Those are the only two. So J.J. Weatherholt is tied for the third highest ranked Top 100 prospect in Cardinals organization history. 37 years now of the Baseball America Top 100. But who do we think will be next year's number one? We don't think this could be Weatherholt. We just said that we think he will be on the opening day roster. Liam Doyle, I think we think has a pretty good chance to graduate as well from how you just laid it out. Maybe not. We don't know how his development goes. But Doyle, I feel like Reino Rodriguez is assured to still be in the minors, still be eligible a year from now. Is he the logical next year number one?
Yeah, I think there's a case that you could spin for Rodriguez pretty easily. Like, I think that's the easy answer, because when we just look at the track record of SEC starters that had the type of success that Liam Doyle had in the SEC, those guys tend to get up to or just college starters that have this kind of success. Cause I guess Burns isn't technically an SEC starter, though he was at one period in time. Those guys get up to the big leagues very quickly. You know, usually by July, especially if they're like, he's dominating Springfield. Okay, we sent him to Memphis for four starts. And yeah, he's, you know, shutting it down and dealing with the challenge system fine and all that sort of stuff. There's a chance that he gets up to the big leagues and they see what they have here. I mean, there's also a chance that Doyle is the number one next year, has a good season. And, you know, it's just one of those kind of years where, you know, we've seen this at different points. Of course, Bubba Chandler got up last year, but for about 2 or 3 months, every chat that we did, JJ, was like, when is Bubba Chandler going to finally get called up? When is Bubba Chandler finally going to get called up? It could be one of those. He could shove, and then just the Cardinals are like, there's no reason for us to, you know, we're only going to get the pick with Weatherholt probably. You know, he's doing great up here. And there's a scenario where that doesn't happen. Now, if Doyle does get called up, or even if he performs, there is also a chance that Rodriguez just goes nuclear and is one of, you know, is the new Samuel Basayo. Not as big, but a really advanced bat that catches some. And I think his chances of sticking behind the plate are probably pretty similar to Basayo's, maybe even a tick better, especially the organization that he's in and just their track record of developing lots and lots of catching talent. Whether it, you know, turns into something at the major league level is another conversation. But, you know, I do think there's a really good chance he sticks at catcher, sees 70 games behind the plate, performs pretty well there. It's a good arm, and, you know, I think he controls the running game. If he hits the way that he did in low A, in, you know, high A Midwest League, and then maybe gets a double A, as young as he is, it's going to be really hard to keep that guy out of the top 10. So I think there's a chance that he just, you know, that it's not even Doyle doesn't perform, or graduates or whatever. It could just be that Rodriguez is on a rocket ship and this is sort of that next step in him leveling up. As in terms of just like scout feedback, it was about as good as I got in a bat all season long. And we have the underlying data. A lot of you have the underlying data because a big chunk of his season was in the Florida State League. It's all there. I mean, this guy knows how to find the barrel. He makes contact, good swing decisions, all the traits that you're looking for in a top 10 kind of hitter, and a chance to stay at a premium position.
That actually, you just kind of hinted at another part, which is, as we ask, what is this org good at developing? I'm going to have a follow-up question to this, but I you know, it's hard to think of an organization that is churning out more catching prospects right now than the Cardinals. Is that what comes to mind to you, or is there something else?
Yeah, and I think it has to be. Because you sort of look at the Cardinals and you look at some of the prospects that have gotten up to the big leagues. Brendan Donovan, you know, was a prospect for them, a guy that they drafted. But he was a seventh rounder that kind of was a gritty guy that kind of outperformed his draft stock. Some of that I don't think was on them. You know, Burleson, I think, was a success story. They got some hitters, you know, Lars Nootbaar, you know, Mason Wynn. They certainly got more out of him. But I think there's also just as many cases where you'd be disappointed with a Nolan Gorman, a Jordan Walker. I think Dylan Carlson and what he eventually devolved into is a concern. But then you look at the catchers that come through this organization, and so many guys get up to the big leagues. And currently, I mean, they have Pedro Pajes, who's a really good defensive catcher, a guy that was always ranked in the top 30, but more in like the 16 to 30 range. But everybody that threw to him, any pitchers in the Cardinals organization you spoke to, pitching coaches you spoke to, everyone really raved about Pajes' defense. Ivan Herrera should get some more games behind the plate. Not the greatest defensive catcher. He's had some injuries that I think limited his time back there as well, but a really good bat. And then, of course, even beyond Reinaldo Rodriguez, they have two of the better close to the majors catching prospects. And Jimmy Crooks, who's a guy that can hit, that's in the top 10, really good defensive catcher. And then, you know, Leo Bernal, who I guess we're kind of low on versus the rest of the industry, but still have a pretty good grade on. I think he's an everyday guy. I know he won a minor league gold glove. I'm maybe not as enamored by the defense as that might state. Those awards aren't always 100%, but is really good back behind the plate and is going to stick, you know, as a catcher and can hit a little bit. So you can even just look in the current organization and not even look back at the annuals of, you know, Cardinals catching prospects, et cetera, that we've seen come through. They do a really good job with that particular position. So I think it's tough to knock it. And, you know, even some of the guys that get into the organization out of the draft you're always kind of maybe following them a little bit to see, is this the next guy that's going to break out? Because they always have guys that really know how to pick it back there.
That the follow-up is kind of a little bit of what you just alluded to there, right? Which is, what if I'm a Cardinals fan, and obviously it's a new regime, the Heim Bloom regime now, but if I'm a Cardinals fan and you hear about all these great prospects, I get it if you are probably the most skeptical prospect watcher of any organization right now, because Jordan Walker was a top 10 prospect in the game. Dylan Carlson was a top 10 prospect in the game. Nolan Gorman was a top prospect. And in the case of Carlson, Carlson was a 3.2 BWAR player as a rookie, as a 22-year-old, third in rookie of the year voting. At that point, if you said you have a 22-year-old outfielder, center fielder who can play both corners, but he can play all three outfield spots, he's already had a 3-WAR season, he's hit as a 22-year-old, watch out, what is this guy going to develop? And basically, to say that he's never come close to that again, he tailed off the next year, and by the year after that, essentially, he's now in the world of, with an invite, let's see if, you know, like he can regain, you know, big league status as a 26, 27-year-old. Jordan Walker obviously has not been productive. Nolan Gorman, kind of that same little MO where it's like, Nolan Gorman was a 27 home run hitter in 2023 as a 23-year-old, and they're looking for him to come close to back to that again now. How if you're how skeptical, how worried if you're a Cardinals fan should you be? That's like, yes, you've got another wave of prospects here, but the last wave really has not so far worked out.
Yeah, I think, you know, Wynn has worked out. There are some guys that have worked out because I think there are some success stories that we've talked about. I think Weatherholt is a different class of player and prospect than the type of guys that we're talking about. You can be more skeptical, I think, with Ryno Rodriguez. But even in terms of meeting a variety of markers that we look for with quality of contact beyond just EVs and just hitting the ball, you know, bat to ball skills, contact rate, he checks all those boxes, which like Jordan Walker always had some of that stuff lurking, right? Can he pull the ball? You know, the angles are inconsistent. There was always some swing and miss. There was always higher chase rates. And Gorman, there was always, you know, some more hit tool risk. Carlson, I would have to dig in a little bit more to kind of break down specifically what it was that went wrong with Carlson. Cause I did like the player, you know, at the time when he first came up and, you know, it was really impressive. He said, you know, 3+ B war season as a rookie. Yeah. I mean, I would understand being a little bit more skeptical. I think this is a higher upside Cardinal system. I think the players that are in the system have higher floors than the guys that we were talking about. And I think as we get down the list, there's a lot more upside in terms of the pitching than we've seen over the last 10 years, at least in terms of the Cardinals draft approach. It's not really just the K to BB guys that throw lots of strikes, a lot of lefties with 90 mile per hour fastballs. There's some legit stuff now. And I think that's something that Chaim Bloom, first with the Red Sox and now with the Cardinals, it's kind of becoming a signature a little bit of his systems.
I would say you could go back to the Rays, someone on that too. But so that is the end of the video portion of this on YouTube, our Baseball America YouTube channel. If you're watching there and you want to see more of this, you want to hear more of this, I should say, not see more of this. If you want to stare at your radio or your phone while it gives you another 20 minutes or so, we're going to talk about sleepers and some other aspects of the Cardinals organization on the podcast. We'll be right back after right after this.
Every day, companies you've probably never heard of are making billions off your personal data. Your name, address, phone number, even details about your family are pulled from public records in the internet and then sold without your consent. There's an entire marketplace making money off of your privacy, and most people have no idea it exists. Aura's online security capabilities have allowed me to feel safe when it comes to my online presence. Aura fights back. They remove your personal data from broker sites and keep it off. Aura also alerts you fast if your information shows up in a breach or on the dark web. But Aura is more than just a data broker removal. It is a full digital security suite that protects every part of your life online. Aura gives you a VPN to stay private, antivirus to block threats, a password manager to keep logins safe, and spam call protection to cut off scammers. Aura also scans the dark web for your most sensitive information, like your social security number, bank logins, and passwords, and notifies you instantly if they're exposed. Aura also removes what is already exposed, protects what's not, and puts you back in control. Right now, you can try Aura free for 14 days when you visit aura.com/remove. That's enough time for Aura to start removing your personal information from data broker sites. Sign up today at aura.com/remove and get the peace of mind that your privacy, identity, and finances are safeguarded. That's aura.com/remove. Certain terms apply. See the site for details.
So, Jeff, we're back, and this is the part that we always love to dive into. Let's go a little deeper here. Who are some sleepers after the top 10 on this Cardinals list that fans should be paying attention to?
Yeah, I think this is a really fun system to kind of dig a little bit deeper. You know, I think there's kind of some obvious guys like a Ryan Mitchell, you know, who's a high draft pick for them this year. Second rounder that got like $2.25 million signing bonus. That doesn't seem like it's just because of the depth of the system. There are some guys like that might be, you know, more like top 10 guys in a lot of other systems. So that's not that fun. A name I want to call out here is Daniel Ortiz, who is a guy that they had signed out of Walter State JC in Tennessee a couple years ago, 2024. 16th round pick, had really performed over a couple of seasons in junior college. But there's always questions like this of, you know, how are the skills going to translate, right? We see a lot of guys with loud JUCO numbers, and then they come into pro ball and, you know, they get punched a little bit, right? That did not happen at all with Ortiz. Started at low A, you know, but he is just 21, so a little bit younger. Got up to high A across the entire season, 107 full games, JJ. Hit 300, 416, 482, 13 home runs. He stole a bunch of bases. I don't know if that translates so much. When you peel back the layers of the onion a little bit and you get into the nitty-gritty of his underlying numbers, really good EVs, excellent swing decisions, some fringy back-to-ball skills, which I think make the profile a little bit more risky, really good angles. They had him playing a multitude of positions, first base, some third base. I think he played some corner outfield as well. Not a tremendous defender, can run a little bit, so maybe he ends up in a corner outfield spot. But I think when you're talking about a 16th rounder out of JUCO with, you know, a $200,000 bonus, to kind of get that professional debut full, you know, season out of him, really impressive. And I think just the power plus angles with good swing decisions, I can buy into that a little bit, especially if, you know, this is a guy who's coming from, you know, JUCO, so sort of lower level competition, and then seeing a lot of the quality arms that he was seeing throughout the year for the first time. There's some adjustments that can be made there. And oh, by the way, one of the reasons I love this guy, he is a Massachusetts prospect, JJ. Grew up in Lynn, Massachusetts, transferred down
to high school. So many of those.
In Florida. And so I think, you know, even from the cold weather perspective, you can kind of start to maybe build a little bit of a narrative that the hit tool could really level up in the next couple of years. He's really interesting. There are parts of me that maybe wanted to go a little bit higher with him. But getting him in at 20, getting him into the top 20, I think sort of made a statement from an unranked guy and someone that was, you know, way off the beaten path coming into 2025.
So, like you said, the other thing, like the sleeper wise to stand out on this is there are guys who are ranked in spots that would make them sleepers this year, that there have been other years for the Cardinals that they would not. Because the other thing, as you mentioned, is help if you're a Cardinals fan. You said there's been trades here, right? Obviously, I would say Brandon Clark being most notable pitcher they brought in who jumped straight into the top 10. But there are multiple players on this top 30 now, this updated top 30 available at baseballamerica.com that were not Cardinals, but not that long ago. How much of a talent infusion have they made here?
Yeah, quite a bit. And, you know, I think it's one of those conversations where you can talk about, you know, all the different acquisition phases and how they really did a good job across the board. The draft, you know, they went and they got, you know, a Liam Doyle and a Tanner Franklin, another guy with really big stuff. It's more of a college reliever. They do plan to develop him as a starter. And we've seen some of those guys. Brandon Sproat obviously had a little starting success at Florida, was primarily a college reliever. We've seen a lot of those guys take a big step forward. You know, in their first full season as a starter. So I'm really interested to kind of follow a guy like that too. Then I think you look at some of the trades, and while it's not anything that's boosting up their top 10, that's, you do have one guy in Brandon Clark, huge stuff, left-handed pitcher, type of guy that the Cardinals typically have not targeted or gotten in the same trade. They got Yoker Fajardo from the Red Sox, another really interesting young pitcher in the lower levels with good stuff, good slider, good command of his breaking stuff. So he's an interesting one to watch. Ryan Mitchell, who we talked about, was a guy they got in the draft. Jesus Baez was a guy that was a top 5 or 10 prospect for the Mets last year. Had a little bit of a down year, but still has some really good traits, and I think would be a top 10 prospect in a lot of other systems. So you kind of go throughout this system. There's a lot of guys that they drafted, a lot of guys that they traded for. There's been an infusion of pitching talent in particular between the draft with Doyle and Franklin, Cade Crossland to a lesser extent. And then a lot of these other guys that kind of fell in with
Jaro.
Yeah. Well, Eshan was a guy that, you know, was already in the system that they've sort of slowly developed after drafting him in the 8th round in 2023. But, you know, not part of the talent infusion, but maybe one of those classic Cardinals guys of like a lefty pitchability guy, but with a little bit extra like oomph on the stuff that maybe takes him a little bit further and allows him to be like a nice number five type of starter. Somebody who had a phenomenal year. And that was the other part I was going to bring up was, though there were some injuries, some underperformance with guys like Hentz and Matthews, you had breakouts from guys like Josh Baez. Ishan Henderson had a really big season. I think, you know, both the catchers and Crooks and Bernal over the last couple of years have established themselves. And then another one I wanted to call out, somebody that had kind of gotten a little bit forgotten, was Bryson Motz. I believe that he was their minor league pitcher of the year this year, had a phenomenal year, added a couple of ticks onto his fastball. He's now throwing like a low VA, flat VAA four-seamer and a two-seamer that gets a ton of ground balls. So some variance in the fastball looks. He's got an above average, maybe even a plus slider. Dating back to college, he's always got a ton of swing to miss with that pitch. And the command took another step forward this year. Braden Davis is another guy that they had targeted out of Oklahoma back in 2024. He took a really big step forward this year. There's a lot of guys like that in this system. Brian Torres, even, who's 28 years old at the back end of this list and on their 40-man roster, a guy that they got out of independent ball after he had kind of washed out in affiliated ball his first time through.
Baseball America Indie Ball Player of the Year.
That's right. I actually think I had that in the write-up. But I think you look at this, even some of the guys at the back end, like Zach Levinson had a really good bounce back year, even though he's 27 on this list. It's a really interesting system from top to bottom. I would argue it's probably, at least in my experience here in 5 years or 4 years of handbook writing, it's probably the best system I've ever written up for the handbook. And it got even a little bit better afterward.
That's pretty good. So, but you did also touch on, we mentioned a little bit about Quinn Matthews before, but I did want to ask a little bit about Ting Kent, because if there was someone who took, like, he was a top 100 prospect last year, he's not this year. I feel like not just he took a step back, but I would say his role seems more likely to be less than what we thought it was going to be a year ago. Like, is he now more of likely a reliever?
Yeah, and I think even the off-the-record internal conversations I have with Cardinals folks, that's tended to kind of be the overwhelming sentiment that, you know, it's not like it's just arm injuries with him. It's legitimate wear and tear across his frame. I just don't think that he can handle a substantial amount of innings. And, you know, since throwing 96 innings, which was a career high in 2023, you know, he's really gone through the ringer. I think he's had four different stints in the IL, including a 60-day injury IL stint with a rib cage strain at the end of 2024. Was really limited, this year in terms of the number of innings that he could throw and how many innings he could throw in any given appearance. So, you know, I don't think it's totally like, long term, you want to tell me in 3 years, 4 years, he gets to a place they want to stretch him back out again and he's successful at that, fine. But I think in the short term, we're probably talking about a reliever, unfortunately. And the stuff is still really good. It's just he's got to be on the mound.
Yeah, that's always the challenge with pitchers. But it is, like we said, it is an improved Cardinals farm system. It better be, because this is now... this is what this team is kind of built around now, right? We've seen trades. We've seen kind of a little bit of a retrenchment at the big league level. We've seen a changeover to a new head of baseball operations in Hein Bloom. So there's a lot that has changed here. But at the same time, it does seem like the arrival of J.J. Weatherholt, the arrival before too long of Liam Doyle, the arrival of... whether it's Leo Bernal, Jimmy Crooks, you have catchers who are not that far away. There's a multitude of players not that far away. And that gives Cardinals fans kind of something to kind of hope for in going into the second half of the 2020s in a way that has been not really all that true for the last couple of years. And as we've documented, Cardinals fans are a little bit feisty and a little bit unhappy. The fan, the attendance at Cardinals games has seen a decline at a rate that we really don't see for pretty much almost anyone else in Major League Baseball. Other than maybe you want to throw in, like, you can't really say the A's, but you know, the A's who are nomadic and you could say the Rays, but the Rays were playing in a temporary stadium last year. So what that is kind of the good news, bad news with the Cardinals, but with our short summary is that the farm system is definitely ticking up, led by one of the best prospects in baseball, one of the best hitting prospects in the game. Thank you, Jeff. And if you enjoyed this, check out, we have deep dives on all, we're pushing along to get to all 30 MLB organizations to have them all up before really the MLB spring training games really get going up. Not going to promise you we have them up before the first spring training game, but we'll have them up very soon around them. We are working on putting up four of these a week. I believe that we are now into the, we have rounded. We have now more than a third of the league done. Four a week means we will get there before too long. And if you do enjoy this, check out all the other content we have at the Baseball America YouTube channel, the Baseball America podcast feed, and also, most importantly, obviously, baseballamerica.com. For Jeff, I'm JJ. So long, everybody.